All right, folks, welcome back to United We Strike, our radio marathon broadcast that takes place the second Saturday of each month. Although next month, folks, it will be on the 15th because we are building toward the strike, the global three-day strike, April 15th through the weekend, possibly longer. If we get enough support, we can change our world without firing a shot. Now, we're going to be broadcasting a UK section. So we hope that you're all comfortable. Get ready, because we're introducing you now to Andrew Johnson from checktheevidence.com. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Karen, very much.
Well, I know that you have all sorts of things that you'd like to share with us, so I'm going to get out of your way right now. And thank you for being part of this. And here you go, Andrew Johnson. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much. I'd just like to say good morning, good evening, good afternoon to everyone who's listening. I'd like to say thanks to UWS Radio for inviting me to do this slot. This is something of a new sort of departure for myself. I'm more used to being a speaker on a program rather than hosting the program myself. I'd like at this point immediately to make a kind of dedication to the people in Japan who have been going through these terribly distressing events that we've seen unfolding. And I want to talk a little bit about things around that. I'm sure people are picking up a lot of the news about this terrible disaster which is unfolding before us. But I also want to look at some other topics which I think are related to what's happening there, and how we can perhaps change our view of things in future so that we can actually have a completely different world where these sort of things, if they do happen, would never cause the kind of damage that they are causing now. I suppose with this sort of theme, I'd like to just start by reading out a statement from 1997. And this is by Defense Secretary William Cohen. And he was talking at some conference. I haven't got the exact reference, but you can Google this for yourself. He pointed out that others, as in terrorists, are engaging even in an eco-type of terrorism where they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. So there are plenty of ingenious minds out there that are at work finding ways in which they can wreak terror upon other nations. It's real, and that's the reason why we have to intensify our counter-terrorism efforts. Now, this, of course, was said in 1997, 4 years before the terrible day of 9/11, which, as Karen said in the introduction, I will probably talk a little bit about shortly, because I've done a lot of research into those events. But we have to stop and consider whether William Cohen was actually setting up people using a method of predictive programming. In other words, putting statements out into the public arena, which would then influence their thinking so that when such events like the one we're seeing unfolding in Japan right now happened, they would be programmed to view it in a certain way. Now, a lot of people have been talking recently with the terrible events also in Haiti and in China. I think that was in 2008. And then we saw a less talked about earthquake in Honduras in 2009, which I have a friend who lives over there who was in the middle of that 7.2 earthquake. And we've had several others since. So we have to ask ourselves how many of these events are natural and how many of them are being, to some degree or other, engineered. There is good evidence, for example, that the US Navy were involved in an exercise near Haiti just before that earthquake struck. There's also the very unusual characteristic of the Haiti earthquake, whereby the Dominican Republic, which was only, I think, something like 100 or 150 miles away, received no effects of the earthquake at all. So in other words, the earthquake seemed to be targeted over a very tiny area, really. And then we had the resulting sort of political upheaval and takeovers, which I don't know a lot about, but it seemed like there was some type of power grab going on there in the wake of the earthquake. But my interest in this sort of thing has really been heightened because of Dr. Judy Wood's discovery around the time of 9/11. There was this hurricane off the coast of New York City, Hurricane Erin, which was reported by two of the news networks, but only one of them reported by name on the morning of 9/11, and two of them didn't report the hurricane at all, even though it had been travelling in a straight line towards New York City for about 4 days from Bermuda. So people should look into this because although UWS Radio are covering some very important issues, I think these are issues that obviously affect all of us very, very greatly. And if we have a group among us that can actually steer hurricanes, then what exactly are they capable of? And I think I'm going to start by trying to play a clip from a fairly recent Red Ice radio show. And this was interview was recorded by Henrik Palmgren. And he runs a website called Red Ice Radio. And this was from the 25th of January this year. And I don't want to sort of confuse matters because I feel I'm in danger of confusing matters slightly by playing this clip because it talks about HAARP. Everyone talks about HAARP. Now, I don't think HAARP was involved in the events of 9/11. I think I'm fairly convinced that it wasn't, or certainly not the one in Gakona, Alaska. But what you're going to hear in this clip is Garrett, a chap called Gary Vay, telling his story about how he became aware of a second HAARP facility. And I don't know if Rick's there. I'm going to try and play this clip now. But if Rick's there and it doesn't work, then we can see if he can get it to play. But I'm going to try and play this now. I'd say it's all a bit experimental for me. So apologies if this doesn't quite work.
The HAARP installation that I was taken to was not the one in Gakona, Alaska, the one that has a website and most people have seen pictures of. The one that I was taken to was in a place called Poker Flats, which was north of Fairbanks. And I was taken to this installation by two former Navy people who worked there and actually constructed it. And wanted to tell me anonymously that this installation had been fired up and used, and that it had created harm to the atmosphere and had actually hurt some people. And they actually took me around to see the installation, and then later took me to see some of the indigenous people up there that had suffered from the testing of this apparatus on two occasions where they used billions of watts to energize it. And this was later seen echoed in some of the ancient texts when they talked about a phenomenon called burning from the sky. And some of the ancient texts had prophesied a hole being created in the protective layer of the sky and burning of people. So it was kind of a coincidence.
So that's interesting, kind of a second HAARP-type facility than in Poker Flats. Do you know if this basically had the same function as the one we do know about? This is the same atmospheric heater technology we're talking about, right?
Right, and I don't really want to claim to be an expert in HAARP or anything. I was shown the installation so that I could write an article about it and say that it had been used and that it had caused harm, which I did. I wrote a story And then got a reaction from the NSA wanting to know who had told me about this because they had violated their national security oath. It was kind of a touchy situation.
The story that Gary Vay was telling there was of going to a second secret HAARP facility, which was north of Fairbanks, whereas the Kokona one is south of Fairbanks, Alaska. My point in playing this clip really is, I mean, if you go and Google this story, Gary Vay has written a book about this event under the name Dan Eden, and you can get this book for free. He takes it to, you know, a donation for it, but you can basically get it for a minimal cost. The point about me playing that clip is this was an example of a secret installation which apparently nobody knew about. And after Gary Vay had been taken to this facility, he was contacted by people in the NSA wanting to know who'd actually shown him, who'd disclosed the location of this facility. So it's really just to give an indication that there is secret technology that we are beholden to. Things are being done without our knowledge or consent. And these are things which are not just, you know, things like spending on various, you know, small projects. These are huge, huge things which are very, very dangerous. The Gary Vay story says how he met locals that were affected by the operation of this other HAARP facility. And so I've come to the conclusion, particularly with the data from 9/11 about Hurricane Erin, which proves to me that the hurricane was indeed maneuvered and it was put in place, that there is environmental modification technology in use. Now, how much of it is used to create events like we saw in Haiti or currently in Japan, I really don't know. That's more speculative. But as regards 9/11, I have no doubt that this technology was used on 9/11. Now, the other thing is that this is all to do with energy. This is something that people don't really talk about very much beyond the realms of, for example, peak oil or, you know, terrible oil disaster in the Gulf last year, which is still essentially ongoing in terms of its effects. So people are not really focused on what I call the energy cover-up. But a person that was focused on this area, I'm going to try and play another clip here and hope it doesn't go into some strange playback mode halfway through, is a clip from an interview with Dr. Eugene Malov. Now, Dr. Eugene Malov, again, he connects into this energy story in quite a big way, because in 1989, he became aware of the phenomenon called cold fusion, which is more correctly termed low-energy nuclear reactions. And this was basically discovered by two chemists, Pons and Fleischmann, Stanley Pons and Martin Fleischmann, world-class chemists. They'd been researching for 5 years into this effect that they'd observed in the laboratory, where they were getting anomalous amounts of heat, and quite a lot of it in proportion to the size of the experiment, out of their equipment, which was relatively simple. It involved some heavy water and a palladium electrode, and I think they were using lithium hydroxide. And Malov discovered that when the university he worked for, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, when they tried to reproduce the experiment of Pons and Fleischmann, they essentially wrote a report to debunk the work of Pons and Fleischmann. But in actuality, their own experiment had discovered a similar effect to that Pons and Fleischmann had. In other words, for at least part of the time the experiment ran, they were getting out more energy than they put in. And Malov realized that the people that put together this report, debunking Pons and Fleischmann, had basically lied about their data and had tried to cover this up. So instead of this being a huge discovery, it then became a huge battle of egos, essentially. And I'm going to try and play this clip of Malev talking about what he called the academic government complex. And I'll probably say a bit more about that after this clip has played. It's not very long. I think it's a couple of minutes, assuming it plays correctly.
The academic government complex, not the military-industrial complex, as much as the academic government complex, is against new scientific ideas that threaten the foundations of their work. And they, no matter how many papers are published, I don't care whether they're on the internet or not on the internet or where they are, the establishment academic government complex is brain dead.
I mean, why can't they open their arms and say, this is exciting, let's try it, let's experiment, and let's jump in it?
It's remarkable. I must tell you, George, 15 years, almost 15 years now, after that fateful day of March 23rd, 1989, I continue to evolve in my understanding of the emotional and psychological and intellectual armoring, to borrow a term from the famous Wilhelm Reich, that scientists have. It's astounding. One physicist at MIT, whose name is Dr. Hermann Feschbach, one of the world's foremost nuclear physics people, now he's deceased, but at MIT, as I was finishing up my time there as a senior person in the MIT news office as a science journalist, he had played a role in getting rid of a major article that was going to appear in the MIT magazine, a very influential magazine called Technology Review. It's on newsstands all over the place. He said to me, I've had 50 years of experience in nuclear physics, and I know what's possible and what's not possible. And then that was it. That was his total statement, which I would cite forever as a statement, a kind of statement that should never come out of the mouth of any person who considers themselves a legitimate scientist. They're not a scientist if they say, based on previous knowledge and theory that I have, I know for all time what is possible and what's not. That's obviously crazy.
Okay, so that was Dr. Eugene Malev basically pointing out where his superior told him he knew what was possible in science. And this, of course, is ridiculous because new discoveries are made all the time. And sometimes they don't make sense based on what has already been discovered. So we always have to keep an open mind. And what Pons and Fleischmann discovered was extremely important. I would contend that it was so important that if it had gone forward then, when it should have, and been investigated, developed, and so on, we wouldn't have any nuclear reactors in the world today. We wouldn't need them because we'd all have a clean, cheap energy source. But instead, what happened was we had a group of people that came forwards, which essentially started a psychological operation to make sure that cold fusion was completely ridiculed. And the people behind it were essentially chased out of their careers. And essentially, the spending that should have gone on to cold fusion was never really done. And instead, they continued to spend money on hot fusion. And they continued to build fusion reactors, fission reactors, like the one that's now causing all the problems in Japan, and so on. So this is part of the problem. This is part of the problem that we're facing. The energy cover-up and the people participating in it are worse, making the problems that we're having today a lot worse than they should be or need to be. And I think, to tie this in with 9/11, I'd like to play the next clip, number 3, which I hope that Matt can play for me. or Rick. So if we could play number three clip, which is starts 1989's Jones Pons Fleischmann. This repeats at the end, by the way.
Is it a shortcut to fusion energy? I don't want to disappoint anyone. I think I'll put my read my lips answer here, and then I'll carry on. I think that'll become clear why I'm saying that. Can you read my lips on that back in the back? It says no. Energy is a long way off. That's why I say no. This is our result. It's just way off. It's a door that's open to us, but really.
So that was somebody called Stephen E. Jones. Now, where have we heard that name before? Well, that name is the name that brought forward the theory of thermite being used to destroy the World Trade Center. And if you're like me, when this came forward at the end of 2005 and the beginning of 2006, you were taken in by it. I was taken in by it. At that time, I did not know of this connection between Stephen E. Jones and the work of Pons and Fleischmann. But we now have a direct connection between 9/11 and the energy cover-up and the cold fusion cover-up. And it was only later, as I became more and more aware of the details of the work and research of Dr. Judy Wood, that I began to understand how important this really is. It's of huge importance. I can't overstate the importance of this, that people need to be aware of this information, because we have a network of people who are not only controlling the 9/11 truth movement, they are controlling your access to energy in ways that most people have no awareness of at all. And I think what was interesting as well is how this ties in, as I say, into the energy cover-up in other ways. For example, I'd like, I think, to play this next clip, which is slightly longer. I think this one's about 4 or 5 minutes. It's about three and a half minutes, this clip, because this, before I play that, this was another free energy technology which was developed by somebody called Bruce De Palma. It's called the End Machine. And this was a device which was kind of like a glorified dynamo, I suppose. And De Palma worked on this for a number of years and developed it. It was actually based on an original sort of concept of a Faraday induction motor, which was over 100 years old. And De Palma seemed to have discovered that rotating objects, you could exploit the inertia of rotating objects in a specific way and couple that with a type of dynamo to get out, again, more energy than you put in. And modern science is basically not party to this sort of technology. And I think, yes, if you could, it's actually to clip 04, right? 04, please. I was going to skip 03A. Clip 04, if we could play that, please.
Right now, we have the entrenched energy monopolies and cartels. You know, we have OPEC and we have the seven sister oil companies that control all the oil and energy. But what people have to understand is that the people who run the energy business in this world, which is the biggest business on the planet, turning over $4 to $5 trillion a year, it's bigger than guns and drugs, it's bigger than defense, they control the newspapers, they control the governments. But these companies are so big that they regulate the government, which regulates them.
In 1977, Bruce De Palma unveiled the first prototype of the End Machine, an electrical generator which uses rotating magnets to generate up to 5 times more power than it takes to drive it.
I know about the fact that the Japanese government and the Indian government have ongoing projects to produce End Machines for domestic power. My partner is Paramahamsa Tiwari, who is the director of the Nuclear Power Corporation of India, which operates all the nuclear plants in India.
In late 70s, I learned from Bruce De Palma that he had carried out certain crucial experiments by rotating electromagnets.
Tiwari tested a prototype based on De Palma's End Machine under laboratory conditions. The results were deemed too impressive, causing disbelief and suspicion among conservative government officials and the power consortiums that backed the project. Tiwari was forced to abandon the project completely.
One of the pivotal people that I encountered early in my career was Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut. Lift off.
Edgar J. Mitchell, an Apollo mission astronaut, founded the Noetics Institute in Southern California. The Institute's charter was supposedly to develop alternative energy systems by attracting inventors from all over the country. Mitchell became extremely interested in De Palma's end machine. He made De Palma a paltry offer to buy out the invention, which De Palma naturally refused.
He said to me that if I ever tried anything on my own in California, I would get my head blown off. So I was scared to death. The CIA operates through various very innocent-looking fronts to find out what people are thinking and what they're inventing. Now, what's more innocent than the Denying Institute founded on transcendental principles to help New Age inventors bring free energy into the world?
And that situation still exists in the United States today, where a person that really understands what's going on just can't get their idea out because the alternative science and medical fields have been co-opted by the intelligence services.
And he converted this little engine to run on water. This is many, many years ago. And he used it for several years. And somehow the news got out, and one day he got visitors, and he was told to dump the engine or else. 3 weeks later, the man was dead. And the coroner's finding was that he fell off the back of a train. He was drunk. Now it happened that he didn't drink.
There is no progressive science in a world where every scientific idea is evaluated for its military potential.
Power, or energy, and control of energy equals power in the new world order that is emerging. If you control the energy, the way we get around, the way we get electricity, the way we have our TVs and video cameras and stuff, if you do the control of the energy, then you've got control of the people.
So that clip there was Bruce De Palma and a few other people. That was from a documentary, I think, made for New Zealand television, good few years ago. And it was Diary of a Madman, I think, was the documentary that came from. You can pick up one or two clips of that on YouTube, because that's just from a YouTube clip. But you basically heard how Bruce De Palma was threatened by a certain Edgar Mitchell. And yes, indeed, that's, as you heard in the clip, the same Edgar Mitchell that walked on the moon. So it seems that there are various people who are part of the network of cover-up, and Edgar Mitchell appears to be one of those people. Now, two of the people that I've brought audio clips from in this program, i.e. Dr. Eugene Malov and Dr. Bruce De Palma, who's a very well-qualified person, by the way, if you go and check him out, he does have his own website, posthumously. They're both dead. So we see what happens if you try and threaten the energy cartel or bring forward information which is going to affect that cartel. Now, this is again of huge importance, and I think many people haven't seen the connections here. And I think the next clip I'm going to play is also energy related, but it's also 9/11 related, because what I've got for the next clip, number 5, is I've got a clip of myself talking to a chap called John Hutchison, and we recorded this. I've actually edited this clip together because there are a few bits in the middle which didn't really fit with the context of what I was trying to present in this clip. But you can go and find the whole unedited interview between Dr. Judy Wood, John Hutchison, and myself in relation to his work. John Hutchison basically was a Canadian. He is a Canadian researcher, currently down in the Gulf of Mexico region, trying to do experiments with cleaning up some of the water there, which has apparently had some success with. John Hutchison was trying to reproduce the experiments of Nikola Tesla using various energy effects. And starting in about 1979, he started to collect equipment such as old radar equipment, some microwave generation equipment. He made some Tesla coils, or he acquired some for electrostatic experiments. And over a period of time, he collected together about 2 tons of equipment, and he was able to switch this all on and adjust the various frequencies on the dials and generate certain effects. And these effects included levitation of samples and anomalous melting of metals. So I think you'll hear a bit more about what happened to him or to some of his equipment if we could now play clip number 5, please. You've obviously been playing with this for a long time, and I know you've been through the wars, you know, at various times with having your equipment confiscated and things like this. I mean, that I believe that's happened at least twice. Is that correct?
No, main time was 1990 when I was in Europe. It was the Canadian government that took the entire laboratory and tried to make a secret operation, but the newspapers found out about it and published the news.
Okay.
And, yeah, that was... But I've been raided before in 2000.
Okay. And one of the things that, you know, we wanted to just check with you, that I believe it was in 1983... There was a person called John Alexander, Colonel John Alexander, in fact, who'd come to see you because he'd learned about what you were doing. I wondered if you could sort of mention a little bit about that.
Oh, yes. Colonel John Alexander was 1983. He came with a team from Los Alamos, and he said to me that we're expecting a threat from, as I recall it, a threat from the Soviet Union.
Okay.
And that was a concern for the American government. So I gave a demonstration for about 4 months working with the team. And unfortunately, there were some effects that happened, and sometimes it didn't. It seemed like the equipment was sabotaged, and I learned from yet another lieutenant colonel that a fellow by the name of Bob sabotaged the entire project. So John Alexander was a little upset over that, and he brought in another team from McDonnell Douglas to do a clear, not classified report, which I still have that report. And then after that, of course, the Canadian government did their experiments and kept it a matter of national security.
Of course. Now, I think that's, you know, really interesting that we, you know, we do know that people in the military are well aware of what you've been doing. You know, it's not as if you have been, you know, working away totally as like a hermit. They're fully aware of what you've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we understand one of the key things is that in many cases, when you start your experiments, you can switch off the power and the effect that you're generating will continue.
Well, we're trying to do a parallel here, I believe. And when I switch off the equipment, sometimes there's metal samples that have been analyzed by the Max Planck Institute that seem to be accelerated in time, ahead in time.
Wow.
And the crystalline structures are always changing very fast, and the magnetic properties are changing extremely fast. So this is in regards to when I basically shut down the power, these samples, which are many of them, tend to alter.
Right.
Ongoing. The energy in the equipment has been measured at 100 to 400 watts. When I was giving a demonstration for Maine News, the newscaster accidentally chopped the extension cord in half by accident and shut down the entire lab. So that's
wow.
Around 400 watts, the lowest power. And if I'm using more modern equipment, it, of course, I'm up to maybe 1,000 watts energy to drive the systems. And that. The mayor of this city came here, and he's a couple of years ago, talking with me, a friendly fellow, Mayor Wright of New Westminster, and he was talking about these giving reports of concrete cracking up, as well as citizens in distress. And it seems when I do an experiment like I did for National Geographic TV and Film, I blew out the elevator, so they couldn't get their equipment down after the experiment. And just recently, for Fox TV, I was doing an experiment, and then some plumbing exploded downstairs. But I take in consideration too that when I was doing the McDonnell Douglas experiments, that we had a water main explode out in the street. So that's written up in some of the texts. I've been through a lot of mischief.
I think one point I wanted to just dwell on for a second is that, Judy and I, we watch the internet forums quite closely, and there are quite a number of people who are saying, you know, oh, John Hutchison can't reproduce the effects which he's, you know, makes. Mm-hmm. And I wondered, you know, what your response would that to, would be. I almost feel silly asking the question, but,
I think they don't listen to radio or watch TV or read books, because I've been doing this quite regularly for Fox TV in 2000 and onward up for Griffin Productions, as well as National Geographic TV and Film, and onward with many, many different crews have come and gone out of here, and I can sit down, turn everything on, and guarantee an effect within 5 minutes. So whatever they're reading is maybe so old that they just don't bother researching. That's what I feel.
Okay, so there we had me talking to John Hutchison in 2008 on a radio program called We Ourselves, which was hosted by a friend of ours called Ambrose Lane, who again has sadly passed away last year. He was a great man and a great activist. But we were fortunate that he was able to give us a platform to display the connection between what is known as the Hutchison effect, some of what was being described by John Hutchison there in that clip, to the events of 9/11. The research of Dr. Judy Wood showed that we saw all of the effects which John Hutchison had created in the set of evidence that she had been working through in relation to the destruction of the World Trade Center. And you can read about this on drjudywood.com, and you can read about it on my website. And it does appear that what John Hutchison does, the experiments that he does, generates a nuclear effect, and that in turn can either take in energy or it can release energy in various ways. Now, because this phenomenon is not recognized by any sort of standard university or anything like that, it hasn't really been investigated in a fair and open and honest manner. And in fact, what actually happened is when Dr. Judy Wood and myself presented this this evidence to the audience, it was within a few hours that various things were being done to try and tarnish the reputation of John Hutchison. And then if you go, for example, onto Wikipedia and look up the Hutchison effect, Wikipedia claims that the effect cannot be reproduced, which of course is nonsense, because John was able to reproduce this, as you heard in that clip, within 5 minutes. I recently saw a video of him from 2007 where he'd reproduced the levitation effect for a Rob Simone video that was made in that year. So what we basically got again is the clashing together of the energy cover-up and the 9/11 cover-up. And I really have a message for the people who are doing this here, anybody that's listening that knows anybody in the military or the intelligence services. I would ask themselves to consider very, very carefully whose security they think they are working in the interests of. Are they working in the interests of the security of corporate entities who want to make a lot of money out of this, and they want to keep this technology from us because they know that once we have it, we won't really need any governments, we won't need anything like that, because we will have this technology which will allow us to do anything, basically. Once you have energy from nowhere, once you have energy from the vacuum, as it were, a limitless, free supply of energy, creating zero or very close to zero pollution, then the world will completely change. So this is why it's so very, very important to understand the juncture that we're at now, and that we're seeing these events like the ones in Japan have been repeated several times in the last 2 or 3 years now. And we can, if this technology is made available to the wider population by the people who are holding us hostage to it, then we can completely transform the world. I talk about anti-gravity technology, which is, again, what John Hutchison has developed, essentially, or some kind of version of anti-gravity technology is seen with his experiments. You think, for example, if you could lift all the debris and the rubble from this wreckage with anti-gravity technology. With I played this game once called Half-Life 2, and it's got a gravity gun in it, and you could point this gun in the game at an object and it would lift it up and move it out of the way. I wouldn't be surprised if technology like that really does exist. But because we have a group of people, maybe there are more than one group of people running the planet, they will not allow us to have access to this technology. Not only that, they have tried to minimize our awareness of it. And certainly a lot of the information which I've tried to put together and hang together, if you will, over the last couple of years and more, is to prove that this technology is in fact real. It's not a theory. It is not speculation. It is real. And it has been used, especially we can prove beyond any doubt that it was used on 9/11 to destroy the World Trade Center. It's a technology over and above anything which is really spoken of. But the problem is that a lot of people can't really face this reality. And there's been this very comprehensive psychological operation to keep knowledge of this technology completely suppressed and in the realm of fantasy, ridicule, call it what you will. But if you're able to work through that in your own time and you're able to study the evidence, you will be able to see for yourselves that this is true. I've been asked just here about a nuclear explosion on 9/11. Well, this is another theory which came up soon after Dr. Judy Wood's research was put on the table. This nuclear theory of 9/11 I've written about on my website. It was first put on the table by somebody called Ed Ward, who was not a physicist. He was an MD, a medical doctor. I've got an article about that and my correspondence with Ed Ward claiming that micronuclear explosives were used. We then saw another version of this theory put out, I think it was last year, by Dmitry Karlozov, who claimed to be a Russian nuclear expert, who talked about the World Trade Center having undergone nuclear demolition, which is ridiculous because there was very little heat observed by those who were very close to the disaster. We had the streets full of unburned paper, so there was very little heat. The presence of a nuclear device also bears no relation to the presence of the hurricane, for example, which the presence of the hurricane appears to have been to do with what's called field effects, which is exactly the sort of effects that John Hutchison was using. And as you heard in the clip that I played, Colonel John Alexander, who's now doing the rounds at the various UFO conferences, he was at the one in Scottsdale earlier this year, apparently, giving a speech. He went to see John Hutchison in 1983. So we know that the military-industrial complex knows about this technology. And we also have Eisenhower's warning from 1961, which most people at the time didn't really understand. It went way over their heads. And Eisenhower said, we should beware of the military-industrial complex and the rise of power of such a body. And he said it would be disastrous. And I think he was telling us that he knew that he wasn't the ultimate power in the world at that time. He knew there was somebody above him who was manipulating events. And I think if you go and listen to his speech and listen to how he described also the way that intellectual curiosity within universities, that a government contract was now a substitute for intellectual curiosity. That's what Eisenhower said in 1961. And maybe it was this that prompted Kennedy's actions immediately following the departure of Eisenhower. Maybe Kennedy realized what Eisenhower was saying, and he started to try and break up the power structure of the military-industrial complex. And that is why he, ended up being assassinated. So, really, we're getting towards the end of this first hour. I've put out quite a lot of information, and I've tried to connect a few dots here for people. And I'd like them to go and, you know, check out this for themselves and really look into the energy issue, because many people are focused on the political paradigm of what's going on and the events that are unfolding, you know, in Libya and Tunisia and these other places where we've seen all these political and revolutionary turmoil. But remember that we all need energy, and we all rely on it to run our modern world. We're all seeing the increase in fuel costs, particularly here in the UK. We've got very high fuel costs, which is a way of restricting our freedom, because we can't afford to pay for the fuel to move from one place to another. So this is, again, goes back to the situation of looking at these free energy technologies, that we have to get these known about initially, because only when people start to know about these technologies are we going to start to ask for them and start to put pressure on the people who should be, who need to have pressure applied. And these aren't necessarily people in government. This is what you've got to understand. People in government have only got a limited set of information they're working on, the information they're given by their advisors. And typically the government advisors have been in their posts for a lot longer than the government people. So we have to understand that the cover-up is insidious, and it's very comprehensive. And you'll see that people who are using language like I'm using are often attacked. And they are, as you've heard in the case of Dr. Malov and Dr. Bruce De Palma, they're basically put well out of the way. There is another presentation which I've put together on my website about, I've called it Infinite Energy But Not For The Masses, and this is basically a two-hour presentation, and you can watch it online and you can see other instances of the energy cover-up, because it's not just cold fusion and it's not just Bruce De Palma's end machine. There are a whole raft of technologies which they've managed to keep at a level where they've been kept out of the mainstream, just like they've kept out the knowledge of what happened on 9/11 out of the mainstream too. So again, I'd like you to investigate all of those matters yourselves, and if you want to send me questions or contact me by email, you can do that through the website, and I will try to respond to any questions that I get. I've got various videos on my YouTube channel that I've posted, some that I've picked up from others and tried to post them before they disappear, and you can look at those too. So again, we've got two major concerns. One is the possibility that environmental modification technology is being used to either exaggerate or worsen some of the events that we're seeing unfold. I don't know to what extent that is going on, but I raise it as a possibility. But also then, as well, I must mention, for example, in the context of the recent earthquake in Japan, we had a coronal mass ejection on the 10th of March, the day before, which is basically a coronal mass ejection is the release of material from the sun. It's kind of like a big solar flare. And there is some research which seems to suggest that these events can be related to the incidence of earthquakes as well as unusual weather events. So that again is something to consider. Was this triggered by the coronal mass ejection? Was it triggered, for example, by the closeness to the new moon? Those sorts of things, again, you know, you can look into. We've got Jim Birkeland's site, syzygyjob.com, which talks about the relationship of the phases of the moon to the various earthquakes that happen. So again, I'd like people to look into those topics, because to find the truth, you have to evaluate the evidence. And I think I'll just close, if I can find it, by trying to read you a quote from the Hopi Indian tribe, which might seem unusual to fit it, to put it at this point, but I think it is kind of fitting. I've put this on my website as well, so you can read it on there. You can Google it. It's various people have come across it and used it, but I'll try and read this. It's not particularly long. The Hopi Indians said, "We have been telling the people that this is the 11th hour. Now you must go back and tell the people that this is the hour, and there are things to be considered. Where are you living? What are you doing? What are your relationships? Are you in the right relation? Where is your water? Know your garden. It is time to speak your truth, create your community, be good to each other, and do not look outside yourself for the leader. This could be a good time. There is a river flowing now very fast. It is so great and swift that there are those who will be afraid. They will try to hold on to the shore. They will feel they are being torn apart, and they will suffer greatly. Know the river has its destination. The elders say we must let go of the shore and push off into the river. Keep our eyes open, our head above the water. See who is in there with you and celebrate. This time in history, we are to take nothing personally, least of all ourselves. For the moment that we do, our spiritual growth and journey comes to a halt. The time of the lone wolf is over. Gather yourselves. Banish the word struggle from your attitude and your vocabulary. All that you do now must be done in a sacred manner and in celebration. We are the ones we've been waiting for." And that was the elders of the Hopi Nation in Arizona.